In our teaching time today, I want to consider one of the great, great women of faith and courage and common sense in the Bible. It's the wife of Manoah, man in the book of Judges, the mom of Samson. Her actual name is never used in the Bible. It just refers to her as the wife of Manoah. But here's how her story begins in Judges chapter 13, beginning at verse 1. Again, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and that's the pattern of the book of Judges all the way through. And the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. Now there was a certain man of Zorah of the family of the Danites whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had no children. And the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, "Indeed now you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and bear a son." The book of Judges, which I'm focusing on today, I am referring to a time that is topsy-turvy. Do you relate to that term? I actually Googled it to make sure it was the right term, and it's exactly the right term. It's just when things are upside down and sideways and there's no real form, it's just all over the place. It was a period between sweeping moves of God, and it lasted about 300 to 400 years. Book of Judges was about 300 to 400 years. Nothing seemed steady in that time. Miracles were happening kind of here and there, but there was so much mixture involved. If you read the book of Judges, it's not a greatly encouraging book to read because there was so much mixture involved in even what God was doing. God would raise up someone that seemed to be spiritual, and then they would lapse into like idolatry or just honestly, just do stupid things. I mean, there's just no other word to use. You know, we can try to be a little delicate, but it's just stupid. You know, God can't heal stupid. And these people just did things that you just shake your head at and say, what on earth were they doing? I was listening to a pastor friend not long ago at a conference I was at. And he said, you know, the last church I went to, I prayed before I went there, said, God, deliver me from weird. I don't know if the Lord does that, but he prayed that prayer. I see the book of Judges, and I've never seen this before. So this is my revelation du jour. I see the book of Judges a lot like today. Has that occurred to anybody as you've read through the Bible over and over again? It seems like today that we'll see that God's using someone, and then we'll be watching their life, and they get into some kind of false doctrine. One of the newest false doctrines that is just being bandied about, and you may not even hear about this, but I do because I'm with pastors, and I'm reading a lot, and I'm trying to stay up with what's going on, is that the church needs to get unhooked from the Old Testament. That we need to look at the Old Testament less and get unhooked from it. Just concentrate on what's going on in the New Testament. And it sounds like kind of a doctrine that you go, well, you know, I kind of maybe so, but it gets off. And some people that I have thought were really sound teachers have gotten into this doctrine that we need to put the Old Testament aside and just concentrate on the New Testament. Or we'll find out, like I did some not that many years ago, that a man that I had trusted, if I had said, who's a prophet in America today? He would have been on the top five list that I would have said, that is a prophetic man. His prophecies had been correct. And you find out all these years he's been a pedophile. Yeah. 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 My wife and I had a shocking experience when we read an article from the son of our pastor when we lived in New Zealand in our early marriage days. And at the very time we were there, and he was our pastor during those years, he was having sex with boys in the church. And we were hanging out together. He's the first man that introduced Bluff oysters to me. And I still love oysters. But this is the man. I trusted this guy. Traveled with him. Knew him well. You know what I'm saying? It reminds me of the book of Judges. Or we find out somebody's marriage has been a wreck all along. Like we did with the Lakeland revival. And we think God's moving. People are flying in from all over the world. They're coming in from Africa. They're coming in from Asia. They're coming in from all over the world to be part of this great move of God. And we find out that things going on with the minister and his, I think it was his crusade manager or some of the women on the team, something like that. All along. So while the miracles are happening, oh, this other life's going on over at the side. And I read the book of Judges. And yep, that's what was going on then. One of my friends in California told me, he said, we were having a series with a man very well known. I know this guy to this day. I mean, I don't know him personally well, but he was very, very popular and very well known. Having large meetings in crusade halls and auditoriums and everything. And he said, we had him in our church. And he said, people were slain in the spirit. He said, even children were just falling in stacks under the power of God. And he said, one morning, I want to take him out to breakfast. And we had him in a motel nearby in another small town. He said, I went to the motel and couldn't find him, couldn't see his car there. So he said, it was a small town. I just drove down the street. And he said, this was when porn places were actually porn places. You couldn't just do it on your computer, you know? And he said, there was his car. I recognized his car sitting in front of this X-rated place. He said, I went inside, and there he was. And he shared with me that this had been an ongoing part of his life. And miracles are happening every evening when he comes to church. Book of Judges. Read it. It's like that. But God didn't stop moving, but there was no great awakening. There was no overall move of the Spirit of God. It was what one writer called the dancing hand of God, just something here and something there and something over there. It was here and there, and it was mixed with carnality and sometimes witchcraft, sometimes clear witchcraft. Samson is used of God, but he can't stay away from Philistine women. Gideon, God's hero, lapses into idolatry. A priest starts a cult. Another godly man sacrifices his daughter to a bunch of homosexual men, and they kill her. And he's a participant in it. When there's a victory in the book of Judges, it's an incomplete victory. And they defeated this area, but they didn't really finish the job. And they did this, but they didn't really finish it. It's just they did things, but they didn't do a complete work. I couldn't find, and I'll admit, I did not read every word in the book of Judges in preparing for this. It'd take a little too long. But I could not find one prophecy in the book of Judges. Found that interesting. I couldn't find one prophecy. I found only one person that was called a prophetess, actually, and that was the judge Deborah, who was probably the highlight of the judges in just maintaining stability and doing the right thing. She was the only one. But there were no prophecies spoken. God would send an angel to do something, probably because he didn't have a person that was clean, that was walking straight. And so there was a great lack of spiritual leadership. Two times in the book of Judges, it says this, both in Judges 17:6 and in 21:25, it says exactly the same words. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That sound a little bit like today? I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You know, people did whatever they pleased. They did what they felt like doing. There were really no rules. I'll just make up my own rules. Don't judge me. That's your truth, but it's not my truth. Don't tell me how to live. Don't tie me down to your rules. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm pointing this out today, folks, because as I begin to study Manoah's wife, and I've never before taught on Manoah's wife on Mother's Day. I found that interesting. I looked through my Mother's Day notes, my file, and never before. As I thought about Manoah's wife, she had to make choices in the middle of a day like we're living in. So when you think about her in context of life, you can think about today. Because I've just described the day she lived in, and it's pretty much like what's right around us all the time. Moms and dads have to make choices today that I think are very tough. I think it is hard to be a parent today. I think it is tough to be a stable, steadfast, faithful, godly parent today. I think it's hard to be a faithful leader. I will tell you for sure that someone that has pastored a long time like we have, I meet with pastors every week, and we've talked about this. Pastoring 5 years ago, 5 years ago, that's not that long, David. Nothing like today. It's a day like Judges. Read it and weep. I did. I see four things, though, in Manoah's wife that I think are golden. Four choices that she made that show me a great heart. We see the streams, as were pointed out earlier. We see the streams of Manoah's wife in the choices that she made and the things that she did. The first thing is this. She kept her heart open to God in the toughest of times. She never did close down. It was a difficult day. It was a difficult day of oppression for all of her people, but especially a woman. Listen, when it says she was barren, that isn't just a little footnote. That was a life-threatening situation. Because if you were barren and you didn't have any children and your husband died prematurely, you were out on the streets. You had nothing. Your family and your children were your life insurance policy. That was your nest egg, as we call it today. That was your retirement fund, as we call it today. That was all of that. That was the value of your home, as we think about it today. That was your 401k, as we call it today. That was all of that, your children. You were barren, and your husband died prematurely in an accident, and they did dangerous things in those days. Life was worse than miserable. Could be deadly for you. Manoah's wife was not portrayed as a super mom. You know, I lose track of all these terms today. Helicopter parents and what's the newest one? Tank? Rochelle, I think you used it. What was it? What was it again? Bulldozer mom. Yeah. I just caught onto that one recently. Read an article about bulldozer moms. You know what they are? Their child's in trouble. They move in. They come in and fix things. Bulldozer moms. I'm going to tell you what to do. Teachers hate them. Woo! Any of you who have ever been a teacher, you're like, oh man, I hate to see that woman coming in. She's going to tear me up. You know, it doesn't matter what their kid's done. They're a bulldozer mom. They're going to take it for their kid, and they're going to beat up on the teacher or whoever's in charge. I think being a great mom isn't about handling earth-shaking, huge problems of life. I think being a great mom is more about how we deal with the thousands of small explosions in life. And there are thousands of them. You know why? I've just come to a conclusion. And any of you who have parented, see, people who have never had kids, they know how to raise kids. People of us who've raised kids, we kind of go, oh, I don't know much about it. But one thing I found out about kids, they're needy. They're needy. They need food. They need clean clothes. They need answers to a million questions. Who's going to braid my hair? Can I have a snack? A lot of it centers around food. Who ate the Cheerios? Who ate the chocolate? You know? Where are my shoes? Can Haley come and spend the night with me? What's for dinner? See, a lot of it centers around food. Do I have to wear a coat? Oh, the other girls don't wear coats. I hate to wear a coat. You know, I read one of those little things that you put on your bookshelf, and it's little sayings and everything. It said, it's not really lost until mom can't find it. Yeah. See, if you're a mom today, in the midst of matching 100 weird socks, and we've all got weird socks, weird underwear, weird socks at all, it's hard to maintain equilibrium and to have to hear a fresh word from the Lord, to be sensitive to what God's saying. Manoah had that. Manoah's wife had that, I mean. The second thing is, Manoah's wife seems to have maintained her balance in the middle of her personal storm. She had to make tough choices in the interest of her son. Listen to what it says when the angel appeared to her, verses 4 and 5. Now, therefore, please be careful, the angel said, angel of the Lord, not to drink wine or similar drink, and not to eat anything unclean, for behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite to God. Just Nazarite just means set apart. Doesn't mean he was from Nazarene. Has nothing to do with that. That was an area of the country. This had nothing to do with that. It just means set apart. Be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. Has anyone among us read the book of Leviticus recently about the dietary habits? You read that recently? Take a look at that, and then this kind of gets a little bit more ouchy. The angel says, you need to obey all the rules carefully. I don't think selfishness and parenting go hand in hand. I don't think you can be a successful parent and be selfish. The very first thing that Manoah's wife is called to is to live a clean life and to have careful habits, very careful habits. The angel is saying this to her, if you want this child to be what God wants him to be, you're going to have to be very, very disciplined. You're going to have to be very disciplined. See, parents can't say, do what I say, don't do what I do. I've heard parents say that. I thank God my parents didn't say that. Because you know what? Kids have a way of following what you do. They have a way of imitating you more than what we say. I ran across, as I was preparing for today, something I had in my file. I don't even know how long I've had this. It looks pretty old. But it's about homeschooling. It's about how moms homeschool us. Everybody's been homeschooled by their mom, whether you realize it or not. Here's some selections from this sheet. My mom taught me to appreciate a job well done. If you're going to kill each other, do it outside. I just finished cleaning. My mom taught me religion. You better pray that will come out of the carpet. Yeah, we had a friend in California, pastor's wife. Gene and I often refer to her to Mary. We know who we're talking about. And she told us one time, she's a tough lady. She'd been in the Marines, and she's just a tough lady. And she said, this was when people were talking to their plants back in the 70s. You know, a lot of people talk to their plants. They thought that would help them grow. Special music around. She said, I talk to them. I tell them, you better grow or you're going to die. My mom taught me logic. If you fall out of that swing and break your neck, you're not going to the store with me. My mom taught me foresight. Make sure you wear clean underwear in case you get in an accident. That's, yeah, right. My mother taught me about the science of osmosis. Shut your mouth and eat your supper. What am I going to do, put it in my ear? My mother taught me about stamina. You'll sit there till that spinach is finished. Or Fred, it was broccoli, or yeah, whatever. Fred loves broccoli. Call it devil weed, don't you? Yeah, that's what I thought. My mother taught me how to solve physics problems. If I yelled because I saw a meteor coming toward you, would you listen then? My mom taught me about behavior modification. Stop acting like your father. My mom taught me about envy. There are millions of less fortunate children in this world who don't have wonderful parents like you do. I love that. My mom taught me about receiving. You're going to get it when you get home. My mom taught me medical science. If you don't stop crossing your eyes, they're going to freeze that way. You know what? My mom actually told me that, and I believed it. I used to do it just for fun, cross my eyes. She said, they're going to stay that way. They're going to stick that way. I said, oh, my goodness. Broke me. Didn't do it anymore. Let's see here. Oh, my mom taught me to think ahead. If you don't pass your spelling test, you're never going to get a good job. My mom taught me humor. When that lawnmower cuts off your toes, don't come running to me. And here's the last one. My mom taught me about genetics. You're just like your father, once again. Yeah. See, the angel didn't simply say, teach this child how to think and not to abuse his body. What the angel said to Manoah's wife was, you don't drink. And you don't abuse your body. That's interesting, isn't it? The angel didn't say, teach this child. He said, you do it. You do it. Folks, I have heard, and I'm not thinking of anybody in our congregation, but I've heard parents actually talk about going to really raunchy, R-rated movies, and then with a wink, turn to me and say, but we left the kids with grandma. As if that makes it all right. But we left the kids with grandma because we went to a really raunchy movie. Doesn't make it right at all. There's a trickle down. There's a trickle down. It always happens. The angel said, you get it right. That's the most important thing to your child. Number three was that she included her husband in what God was doing, even though the angel only came to her. Never noticed that before. The angel only came to her, but she was constantly, in verse 3 it said, the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman. And then in verse 6 through 8 says, so the woman came and told her husband, saying, a man of God came to me, and his countenance was like the countenance of the angel of God. Very awesome. But I didn't ask him where he was from, and he didn't tell me his name. And he said to me, behold, you shall conceive and bear a son. Now drink no wine or similar drink, nor eat anything unclean, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death. Then Manoah prayed to the Lord and said, my Lord, please let the man of God whom you sent come to us again and teach us what we shall do for the child who will be born. So it's almost as if Manoah is saying, Lord, please come back again, but say it to both of us so that I can hear it as well, what we are to do. But notice this, what 9 and 10 say, the verses 9 and 10. It says, and God listened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came to the woman again as she was sitting in the field, but Manoah, her husband, was not with her. God came back to the woman. Then the woman ran in haste and told her husband and said to him, look, the man who came to me the other day has just now appeared to me. So God came to the woman again and told her what they were to do. Now, I don't want to come to any great conclusions about that, but listen, guys. I am not a closet borderline feminist. I am not. But it is true that sometimes your wife is going to be, she's going to have spiritual insight into something that you're not going to see. Just as simple as that. And we need to listen to it. And we need not be stubborn. I can't tell you how many times I've heard pastors say, my wife had a warning about that woman and I just didn't see it, but she did. And it turned out to be true. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that story. It happens often. And I think it happens in, it's not just pastors' lives, it's people's lives. We need to listen to our wives. But notice how submitted and gracious she is. Notice how Manoah's wife said to him, come and see him. I want you to share with me and what God's doing here. I want you to know what God's saying. There was no attitude of smugness in her. There was no attitude of spiritual superiority, like I've got the word of the Lord and you don't. There was nothing like that in her. She was just simply coming. She said, I want to share it with you. Come, I want you to meet this guy. Now, Gene Robertson is right. We men do tend to be left-brained. We do tend to be logical, rational, and you know what, guys? Pretty often, more often, skeptical. In other words, the wife says, I heard so-and-so. Ah, no, that's not true. You know, when my wife calls me Spock, I know I'm getting out of touch with spiritual connection. Yeah. But ladies, listen, share with us, take the risk, give us a chance to hear what you see, what you think God is saying, what you think God's doing. And guys, hear it with an open heart. You might just learn something that you didn't know. And here's the last one, number four. She was a voice of moderation and reason under pressure. Listen to these next verses. When the angel of the Lord appeared no more to Manoah and his wife, then Manoah knew that he was the angel of the Lord. And Manoah said to his wife, we shall surely die because we've seen God. But his wife said to him, if the Lord had desired to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and a grain offering from our hands, nor would he have shown us all these things, nor would he have told us such things as these at this time. You hear her? Just a voice of moderation and reason. She didn't have a great revelation. She didn't quote scripture to him. What she had was a lot of common sense. She just had a lot of common sense. All of a sudden, Manoah does what men do. He got all fixated on some kind of traditional teachings that he'd been exposed to because it was part of the Jewish culture. And his wife just simply says to him, now, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. See, I love that. Wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. And she just kind of talked him off the ledge. Well, she did. See, we men tend to be all or nothing. We do. We tend to be all or nothing. I'll never buy another thing at that place again, ever. They're all crooks in that place over there. They're all crooks. Never buy a Ford again. I know of guys that won't buy a certain brand of car. Never buy a Ford again, ever, ever, ever. Because I had a Ford and it just wasn't any good. Fix or repair daily, that's what it means, you know, whatever. Yeah, right, Doug? I mean, I'm sure you get that kind of stuff. I'll never eat in that restaurant again. That waitress, she didn't treat us right. I'll never go in that door again. You know, men tend to be like that. Our wives tend more often to look at the big picture and say to us something like, let's just think about that for a moment, you know? And a day like today, what I'm calling a topsy-turvy time, listen, there are many temptations to be extreme in lots of areas. I find today that people have more extreme views than I've ever heard of before. Everybody's taking sides on everything. Political parties. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Strong views. Political. Tattoos. Oh, got a strong view on that. Let's argue about it. Movies. Oh, shouldn't go to that movie. Don't go to that movie. Bad movie. Good movie. Wonderful movie. Things like clothing and music. People have strong views on these things. They get on Facebook. I'm going to tell you what I think. Like I care? Video games. Anybody watching video games? If you're used to video games, it's all wrong. It's an extreme view. Social media. Now, I admit, I have one friend on Facebook. I do. I have one, and it's the district office. So anytime I get something that's from the district office, it shows up on my email. And so I can go to it and see what they're saying because they do the Facebook thing. So I've got one friend there. So admittedly, I'm not a big Facebook guy, right? I mean, that's just the truth. But it's not all bad and it's not all wrong. And is Larry Nielsen here today? Is Larry back here? Listen, this is a guy that is our Facebook missionary, I think. He is communicating with people all over the world, all the time. I don't even know if he does it by Facebook or Instagram or WhatsApp or any of those other things. Those are the only three I even know the names of, but there's a lot of it out there. Some kind of social media. And he's always coming to me and saying, I was just talking to my friend today in Italy, and he's in big trouble, and God just showed me some things there. And so you know what? I look at that and I say, praise God. Praise God. Thank you, Larry, for doing that, because I've just got one friend. The district office, so I'm not exactly on Facebook a lot. We need to have a balanced view in all these areas. And we need the balanced view of women like Manoah's wife. Ladies, we need that. We need that in the church. Need it in our lives. Women who say, wait a minute, let's think about that. There's much more about the story of Samson and his parents. How God, this is one of the mysteries about Samson. Boy, I read this again and I've read it before. How God was steering Samson in ways that seemed totally wrong. And it said God had a hand in it. Seemed totally off course. And it said, but God was causing it to be. You know, those are hard things. His parents couldn't fathom that God would be causing him to do these things. But in the end, he returned to his faith and he accomplished a great victory. I think that's the power of God's love.